Welcome to the Positive Persistence Podcast, where ordinary people inspire your extraordinary success. Hey, what's up, family? Today, we're talking with John Kippen. He's a resilience and empowerment coach who turned the trauma of a brain tumor and permanent facial paralysis into his greatest superpower. He uses his story, his mindset shifts, and his love for magic to help others get out of their own way, embrace who they are, and start living their best, most authentic lives. John Kippen, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. John, you have an amazing story. So I want to just dive in so our listeners and viewers can get the most out of this episode. If you could, can you take us back to 2002? Were the events, what were the events that had you waking up in a hospital bed recovering from brain surgery?
Shortly before my surgery, I started having trouble hearing men's voices in my left ear on the phone. And then that progressed to dizziness. Pretty much every standing and waking moment, I was dizzy. So after seeing numerous doctors, I was forced to have an MRI, and I'm claustrophobic and a big guy, as you can tell. So getting in that tube was not an easy task. It had been going on for about a month, so I was pretty anxious. So I remember exiting the MRI room and going to the front desk and saying, how much for those films that you just printed? And I remember them saying, oh, no, no, those go to the radiologist, and the radiologist will review the films and then send a report to your doctor in a day or two. And I said, that wasn't the answer to my question. How much for those films you just printed? You can always print another set for the radiologist. And the lady looked at me with this blank look like, no one's ever asked that before. So she called her office manager, and the office manager said $300. And I pulled out my Visa, and I said, charge me up, baby. I'm taking them with me. And then I drove straight to my ENT office and walked in without an appointment. And as I passed the reception window, he was standing behind there, and I held up the envelope with the scans. And that was my hint to him to say, come on in. So I went in, and he went into a room, and he took the first scan and put it up on his light board, and the color drained from his face. And he took it down and put it in the envelope and said, John, I think I see something. And I'm not an expert, so I'm going to make an appointment with a world-renowned brain surgeon.
This was, just to be clear, this was your ear, nose, and throat doctor?
Yes. And so he called a doctor at the House Ear Clinic downtown L.A. and made an appointment for the very next day. So I went down the next morning. They saw me pretty quickly. Same thing, the doctor came in, introduced himself, put the MRIs up on the light board, and this time he got on the phone and called a neurosurgeon to come in for a consult. And I'm watching this like it's a movie. I'm sitting on the examining bench with the tissue paper under my butt, kind of squirming and hearing it rip, and they conversed for a second, then the neurosurgeon left, and the doctor got on the phone and talked for a minute and came back and said, John, you have a 4.5-centimeter acoustic neuroma brain tumor, and it's killing you by displacing your brain stem. I moved another patient, and we're operating on you a week from today. You're going to go deaf in your left ear. Nothing we can do about that. And there's a possibility for some residual facial weakness. And then he left the room. And it was just like, I didn't really understand what had happened. I started to go into shock. So I opened the door and could hear the surgeon dictating a thank you note to my doctor for referring me. And I knocked on the door of his little office, and he was sitting there on a stool in front of his computer dictating the note. And I said, excuse me, doc, we weren't done. And I brought him back to my examining room, and I started drilling him with questions, and I didn't know what to ask. And so he said, we'll get to that. You'll be back a couple times between now and the surgery, and we'll answer all your questions. So I was like, okay. And then I remember meeting my parents for lunch at one of their favorite restaurants, and my mom and dad wanted to know every detail. And they were like, I don't know. I'm having brain surgery a week from today. That's all I know. So I had a week to put my affairs in order, get one of my consulting guys who worked for me to take over my business while I'd be out of the office for weeks to months. Who knows? I had no expectation. Night before the surgery, my mom and dad took me to one of my favorite restaurants. We had a great meal, and they checked me in, and they took blood and so forth. And then I got to my room, and they said, try to get some good rest. And I'm like, yeah, right. I got maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And then at 6 a.m., like clockwork, the orderly knocked on the door and said, okay, John, here we go. Get undressed. Here's a gown. Get naked. Lay on this gurney and cover yourself up because here we go. And, you know, at that point, all my senses were heightened. I could remember the temperature in the room. I could remember how cold the gurney was. And so I'm laying there, and he's pushing me down this hallway, and I see these fluorescent tubes go by. Shoom, shoom, boom. So we get in an elevator. We go down to the first floor, and he rolls me into the surgical prep area. And I remember a nurse asking me, so, John, we need to shave half your head. Do you want me to do it now or after you're under? And I was like, after I'm under, please. So the next thing, they're rolling me into the surgery, put me on the operating table, say, okay, count backward 5, 4, 3, 2, and I'm out. Next thing I know, I'm waking up in surgical recovery. And it was like I was 50 meters underwater. And I was swimming, trying to get to the surface. I heard this faint call of my name. John, John. Wake up, John. And as I got closer to coming to, I realized it was my dad's voice. And I came to, still groggy, but, you know, I could recognize that I was in an recovery room. And the first thing I noticed is that dizziness that had plagued me for a month or two was gone. And what a relief that was. And then I looked and I saw my dad was sitting on the edge of the bed holding my hand. And, but then I didn't see my mom. So I asked for my glasses and I tried to put them on, but my head was bandaged. So it kind of went on cockeyed. And I'm looking around the room and there's my mom. And the look on her face is one of horror. What did these poor butchers do to my son's face? At that point, I didn't know my face was paralyzed because I had full feeling. I just can't smile. I can't move the left hand side of my face. So my mom handed me her little compact mirror. And I looked at my face and I was like, oh my God, what happened? Fortunately, the doctor came in and I could ask him what was going on with my face. And he said, John, when we were closing the incision, there was a slight swelling, we think, you know, caused your facial paralysis, but we expect it to be temporary. So that was relief. That was relief. And then he left the room. And I started healing. And I was, they said, all right, John, once you walk around the floor 4 times unassisted, we'll let you go home. So that was my goal. And every day, you know, I remember the nurses saying, wait for the physical therapist. And I said, no, man, I'm up and around using my walker. I want to get out of this place. So Friday came and they said, okay, you can go home. And my dad came and picked me up and took me home. And I sat on my couch and just had a friend stay over to kind of tend to my every need while I recuperated. And I coughed. And all of a sudden I realized the back of my neck was wet. And it was like clear liquid. It wasn't blood. What was going on? So I called the doctor and they said, oh my God, get back here right now. So called dad. He came and picked me up, took me back to the hospital because I had developed a spinal fluid leak from the base of the incision. You know, when they removed the tumor, the golf ball-sized tumor, they had to replace it. They had to put something in its place so that the brain wouldn't bounce back and forth. So they cut open my stomach and pulled out belly fat. Now, when they told me that that's what they were going to do, I said, please take it all. They were like, sorry, that's not our job. We can't do that.
Not that kind of surgery.
So evidently, they had not closed the incision properly. And they said, we're just going to put some compression bandages on it and hope it stops. Well, three more visits to the doctor's office that week, and it wasn't stopping. I ended up convincing them to take me back to surgery, reopen the incision, reopen my belly, pull more fat out. You can call me fathead. And it, and, you know, I laugh about it now, but during that time, it was one blow after the other. It was one mystery. It was one, are you kidding me? Are you really kidding me? But, you know, I had no choice. It was something that I had to heal from. And fortunately, as I got home and started recuperating, I got bored. So I remember going back to my week follow-up appointment, and I drove myself. And I remember the doctor saying, so, John, where's your dad? I don't see him. He said, oh, no, I came on my own. He said, you drove? And I was like, yeah, wasn't I supposed to? And every time I saw him, I was asking the same question. When's my face going to start moving? And all he could say is, John, just be patient. Just be patient. And so I learned patience. And unfortunately, after my 18-month checkup, I went to my doctor appointment. My doctor wasn't there, so I saw one of his colleagues. And he had my file in his hands and didn't know my case, really. He was just there to talk to me. And he said, John, do you have any questions? I said, sure. When's my face going to move? And again, he wasn't familiar with my case. So he said, well, how long has it been? I said, 18 months. He goes, 18 months? Why'd you wait so long? I'm like, what do you mean? Why did I wait so long? I went to the doctor once a month, once a week for a month, once a month for 6 months, and then every 6 months until now. And all the doctor could say was, oh. And he explained to me that after 12 to 18 months, the attachment points of the nerve to the muscles atrophy. So even if the nerve magically starts working again, the muscles will never react to it. So at that point, I was, you know, I lost hope that my face was going to recover. And that hope was keeping me engaged. You know, fortunately, I was a computer guy and I could work from home and I had a team who worked for me. But at that point, I was having trouble going out and being seen, going to parties, celebrations, memorials. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to go out of the house. And the only place I felt safe, which was interesting, there was a local casino in my area, and I loved playing poker. So I'd drive to Hollywood Park Casino, and I'd sit at a table. And I realized that the other players at the table could care less what I looked like. They just wanted my money. It was kind of freeing, you know? It's just because they accepted me for who I was. I hid from cameras and mirrors for 12 years. In fact, I covered all the mirrors in my house except for one. And that 12 years went really, really, really quickly. Of course, I lost my relationship. I lost friends. I lost my self-confidence mostly. And then after 12 years, I was fed up. And I remember watching a David Copperfield special on television. And it reminded me how much I loved performing magic as a kid and a teenager. I did magic for a good long time. And so I said, damn it, I want to perform magic. And I joined a magic club in Hollywood called the Magic Castle. And little by little, I started performing. And I was still self-conscious. So as I would come out and sit me on a table with guests in front of me, strangers, I would say, you know, guys, welcome. My name is John. I've been doing magic all my life. But in 2002, I had a brain tumor. And when they cut out my head, they traumatized my facial nerve, hence the paralyzed face. But something happened to me on that operating room table. Now, I'm not sure what it was because I was unconscious. All I know is I recovered. Well, I realized I had acquired some new skills. And then I would pause and wait for the audience to get on the edge of their chair, wanting to know what possible skills I could have acquired from having brain surgery. And I look to my right and my left, and I lean in and whisper in a loud voice like it was the biggest secret in the world. Guys, I'm able to visualize people's thoughts. And then I would do some mentalism, mental magic. And what I did was two things. Number one was that answered the question that everybody wanted to know. why was my face paralyzed? It was like they wouldn't ask, but they were distracted by it. And the second that shared something personal about me. So all of a sudden, you know, there was compassion there. People understood. They knew I had been through the ringer. But now they could pay attention to the magic. So many times after I would be done performing, people would come up and thank me and say, you know, you gave me strength. And they would tell me what they were going through. Most people were going through cancer of some type. And they were scared. They were scared how cancer was going to affect the rest of their lives and whether or not they're going to be able to go into remission or whatever. And so I would spend time with them just talking and telling fun stories. I'm a storyteller, you know, and I'm a creative problem solver. So I would just be with them. No judgments, just a friend. And I realized that through my coming out of my shell, through me understanding that being different can be your superpower, I inspired other people to stop hiding from life.
I love that you brought that up, that being different is your superpower, because I know that's one of the things that you talk about. How did you go from seeing your facial paralysis as something to hide, as you said, you hid for 12 years, to genuinely believing it was your superpower? Like, what was there a specific internal conversation that you had or an external event that flipped that switch for you? What was the catalyst there?
One night at the castle, I was waiting for a group to do a show. And this woman was walking down the hallway, dressed all in baggy black clothes with a hat that reminded me of a witch's hat. And as she approached, I said, "Hi, how are you?" She stopped. But the look on her face was one of, just leave me the heck alone. And then she continued walking downstairs to catch up with the rest of her friends. Well, I ignored her and I followed her and I caught up with her friends. And I said, "Guys, you having a good time?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, this is an amazing place." And I said, "Yeah, but have you seen any really good close-up magic?" And they shrugged their shoulders. I said, "Come on, let's go." And I took them to a corner table. I had a green felt so I could slide cards around it. And they all sat, and the woman who was dressed in baggy black clothes, her name was Darren, and I put her to my right, and I made every magical moment in my show about her. Everything, every magical moment happened because she did something. And my goal for that 30-minute show was to get Darren to smile. That was my only expectation. That was my only goal. And so I was performing, and within minutes, all of a sudden, she sat up straight. And she started smiling, and her eyes started to glisten and to dance. And I could tell whatever baggage, even though I didn't know what it was gone for the moment. And I finished my show. And normally, audiences get up, and they go on and see another performer. But this group wanted to stay with me, wanted more. So I shared the story about how I had hid from cameras and mirrors for over 12 years. And that all stopped when I went to my first magic convention in 2017. One in Vegas called Magic Live, when I was amongst the greatest minds in magic. And I said, "Damn it, John, I want to remember these moments. I want to take pictures with these great minds in magic." And I would literally walk up to him and hand my phone to a stranger and say, "Do me a favor, take our photo." And I did that 30 or 40 times. And I got home and I uploaded the photos to my computer, and it dawned on me, if these great minds in magic, these mentors of mine, had no trouble taking a picture with me, what the heck was my problem? And that was really my true beginning of my healing, where I understood that my facial difference did not define me if I didn't let it. And that's what gave me the strength to say, who cares what people think? If people don't want to be my friend because I have facial paralysis or I'm overweight or my head's bald, I don't give a, they wouldn't be good friends to have to begin with.
And I think that's so important. And I'm wondering, can you break down why for you and for clients that you've worked with, why that shift was so powerful? Like psychologically for you and emotionally for you, the way that you changed how you viewed yourself allowed you to own your own story. And so I was wondering, like, can you tell us why that shift is so important? It's time to ask yourself, when was the last time you prioritized you? Did you know that research shows that nearly 85% of high performers struggle to maintain a performance mindset while juggling the demands of work and personal life? Those who actively prioritize their performance mindset and personal growth are 30% more likely to achieve their goals in business and life. If you're feeling crippling stress and anxiety, or if you're feeling guilty when you take a moment for yourself, or if you're stuck in the grind and feeling burnt out, you're not alone. Many of us yearn for more, but struggle with the fear of being judged or feeling selfish. And you want to step into the next best version of yourself. That's why I created the Rinse Method, which got me from paraplegic to marathon runner. Backed by science-based proven strategies and now customized for high performers like you. If you're stuck and stressed and want clear steps that you can implement today to move forward, make sure you visit thepositivepersistence.com to download our free Rinse PDF.
It allows you to be your authentic self. It allows you to communicate to others who you are, not up here, but in your gut, in your heart, and show your passions, what you're passionate about, what you're good at. And people see that authenticity. And everybody's hiding with something. No matter who you are, people are hiding. And they don't necessarily know how to get out of that behavior. But when people would be with me, they would see the whole kit and caboodle. They would see that I'm not hiding anymore. And I'm living my best life. And every time I would help someone overcome that fear of being judged, I would feel empowered. And it almost became a drug. You know, I equate it to getting a knock on the door from a born-again Christian or a Hare Krishna or someone in who's found their enlightenment. And their mission is to share it with every single person on the earth. And I used to just close off and say, I'm not interested. I'm not interested. But I understood that they were going through the same thing I was, is that they had found their secret sauce. They had found their motivation. And they honestly wanted to share it with everybody. And I started having more tolerance for people who were so excited about their newfound spirituality.
I know by now our listeners and our viewers can tell you are a masterful storyteller. And you're also an author. You want to tell us a little bit about the book that you've written?
I wrote a book. You know, it's funny. I'm dyslexic, so I don't read for pleasure. So writing a book became a task that I don't know if I was up to the challenge, but I did come up and wrote the book called Playing the Hand You Were Dealt. And I offer a copy of this book, an electronic PDF version of this book, to your listeners. And in a few moments, I will give you a link to download, to fill out a quick form with your contact info, and then you'll be taken to a page where you can download a copy of the book. The password's simple. It's just my name, John Kippen. The book is a motivational memoir. It kind of takes place from the minute I was born to today and what I've accomplished in my life. And, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, I live my life feeling it's better to ask for forgiveness and permission. And that's bit me in the butt half a dozen times, I have to admit, because there's a fine line of where you cross and then someone slaps your hand. But most people just see the will and to see that you have a mission, and they're not going to get in your way. They don't want to get run over. Running my life that way has given me some of the most amazing life experiences. The people I've met, the people I've helped, the people I've worked with. Jamie Lee Curtis, a close friend of mine, wrote the foreword of the book because she believes in my mission. And she started out as a computer consulting client and then became a lifelong friend. There's pictures of me performing for Alex Trebek on his 75th birthday party. And that came around because, you know, he came out on television during a Jeopardy intermission and shared with his viewers and fans that he was fighting the battle of his life for pancreatic cancer. And he was so out there. And he honestly asked for the help, love, and support and prayers of his millions of fans to help him fight this disease. And I had goosebumps. I was like, wow, look at a man who refuses to hide in front of millions of people on national television. And I, again, had worked with people who had had cancer and did I cure cancer? No. But I gave them the hope to keep on fighting. And numerous people actually beat cancer because they wanted to give up and I wouldn't let them. I would give them tools to help them cope with fighting.
I think what is important to highlight here, which is a great segue to what I want you to talk about next, is not only did you give them hope, but you showed them what is possible, right? Which is part of what you speak on and what you coach about. Your coaching method reframes the word impossible into I'm possible. And I was wondering if you could kind of break that down and walk us through that framework of your method.
My I'm possible method basically is that we all have the power to change the direction of our lives. It takes some courage. It takes some dreaming. You know, I talk a lot about dreaming. So many adults have stopped dreaming. You know, as a kid, I lived with my parents and was an only child, and they'd have a friend over for dinner, an adult friend, and the adult friend would say, John, nice to meet you. Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to be a fireman. No, wait, a policeman. No, an astronaut. Wait, I want to be a rock star. And then I would go grab two rulers and go in my room and start banging on stuff like it's a trap set, and I could live in that land with make believe for an hour or more, or until mom said dinner was ready, whichever came first. And then as I grew up, I realized that people have that childlike wonder. And that's why I love magic so much, because it's all about wonder, awe, and this astonishment, turning the impossible into possible. But then they start following a dream. And most of the time, that dream is not theirs. It's their parents' dream. It's their relative's dream. It's their wife's dream. It's their girlfriend's dream. But it's not their dream, because they've forgotten how to dream. And all of a sudden, they get to be our age. And you look back and you go, you know, I've checked all the boxes. All the boxes of what I wanted to do. Why do I feel so damn empty? And it's because they were living someone else's dream. So with my clients, we go back to the exercise of actually dreaming again without any kind of limitations, financial, emotional, family. We put all that aside. And if you could have anything you wanted, if like you could grant three wishes, where would you see your life? And after we figure out what they want to do, we talk about, okay, well, what's realistic and how do we get you there? And we work it together as a team to try to fulfill those dreams. And it's funny, you know, when people come out and they articulate finally the dream, I would say 95% of those dreams were helping other people. And that's the secret of being joyful. That's a secret of happiness. Happiness is a choice. And helping others, no matter what you choose to do, whether you go to medical school or you go back to or whatever, just being present with people, being a friend, going out of your way. You know, I spend time on social media and I'll see friends post something on social media that's out of their character, that doesn't sound like them. And most people see that and they just keep on scrolling. Oh, he's having a bad day. I stop and I call that person and I say, Ian, I saw that post and it didn't sound like you. What's going on, brother? Let's just talk. You know, it's their way of reaching out for help without having to articulate that I need help. And those conversations I cherish because I'm answering their plea for help by just being present, just by being noticing that something is out of whack with them.
You know, outside of noticing something like that, what are some other, we'll call them red flags maybe, that someone has slipped into living a life designed by others, as we'll call it? What would you say are some of the telltale signs maybe that you've uncovered with some of your clients?
I had a client who was actually a fellow coach, and we went to coaching school together. And we got to a point where we had to do 30 hours of coaching. So we chose to coach each other, and we develop a bond. A close bond. And then we got to the point where it was time to actually build our coaching businesses. And I had a name for my coaching. I had everything, all the pieces together. I built a website and so forth. And I turned to her. I'm going to just say her name is Julie because I want to be respect her privacy. And Julie, I noticed that you don't have a name for your coaching. Let's brainstorm. Let's come up with a name for your coaching program. And we came up with a Julie's Method coaching. And we took the word Julie and we turned it into an anagram so that each letter represented one of her key core principles. And it was like a light bulb went off. It was like, oh my God, I've been struggling with this for months. And in a half hour conversation, you felt me figure that out. You know, working as a team with someone who's invested in your success, and that's what coaches are, is people who are invested in your success, not their own. Man, you can complete tasks that seemingly were unsurmountable. But then, so she had her website, she had her domain name, and I'm like, well, where's the website? She said, well, I bought a couple books and I don't know. And she's wishy-washy. And I'm like, Julie, come on, babe, get off your ass and do it. And every time we get together once a week, it was like there was something, some obstacle in her way. And so I said, all right, let's go back. Let's figure out where this apprehension, this stubbornness is coming from, this lack of confidence. I said, tell me about your upbringing. And she said, well, my mom died very early, and I was grew up with my dad, and my dad raised me, and I got to be 18, and he said, okay, Julie, it's time to go. Time to get out of the house. Time to go fend for yourself. And I wasn't really ready, but, you know, I packed up, and I moved out, and I got a job. And I'm really not proud of the job, but it was a means to an end. I said, what was the job? She said, well, it was a dance club. And I became a topless dancer because I could make good money. We did good money. And I said, okay, how do you feel about that? She said, it was a means to an end. I said, okay, so what happened when your dad asked, what are you doing for money? She said, yeah, I told my dad that I was a topless dancer. And my dad said, yeah, that's what I thought you'd probably do. And my eyes bulged out. I'm like, wait, say that again? She said, it's a matter of fact. Yeah, my dad said, that's what I thought you'd probably do. I went, Julie, listen to yourself. The one person in your life that was supposed to love you unconditionally expected that you were going to strip to make ends meet, to make money. Don't you understand that that lack of confidence in you has affected every decision you've made in your life? And that has eroded your self-confidence. You need to call your dad while he's still alive, and you need to say, Dad, I love you, but that was not okay. And I said, don't call me next week until you've actually had that conversation. She called me, and I said, so you had to call with your dad? She said, yeah, last night. I said, what happened? And she said, my dad didn't even remember saying that to me. And when I told him what he had said, he started crying, and he apologized, and we immediately mended our relationship. And I said, how many years did that take? And she said, 20 plus. And I was like, okay, you have your answer. And from that moment on, she started working. She had that self-confidence. She had that appreciation of who she was and that she was powerful. And she could take her life in her own hands and do whatever the heck she wanted. But it was getting to that moment in her childhood where that was the scar that she had, it was so deep.
And that we all have at some level. For someone who maybe feels beaten down by life, maybe working a job they don't love, how can they start to what you call feed their heart again without blowing up their life? Because I know that you have a motto, feed your heart with your art. What's that about?
Find something you're passionate about, whatever it is, painting, sports, magic, singing, dancing, something that brings you joy, and incorporate that into your daily conversations with friends. Because what they'll see is they'll see you light up when you start talking about what you're passionate about. And all of a sudden they're like, wow, look at this energy. Look at this. I like this person. This person is being honest and joyful. And I want some of that secret sauce. I don't know what it is, but I want that. And so that's what it is. It's a secret sauce. Because if you live your life with the good, with the glasses half full mentality, even though there are things that are bugging the heck out of you and challenging. You know, one of my tools that I developed is called the tripod method. The tripod method came from when I was in college. I was doing theater and I was working on a children's theater production. I was a prop master and I had to build a tripod to hold a pot of soup over a fire. And it was all vintage look. And I was sitting in their scene shop with all the raw materials on the bench, the workbench, and I was stuck. I didn't know how to proceed. And my instructor came over and he was this guy from Paducah, Kentucky, with a thick accent and suspenders and a scar hanging out of the back, out of his mouth. Boy, that didn't take you to raise. What's going on? I said, Jerry, I'm just having trouble getting started. And he said, I didn't take you to raise, boy. And he directed me. He said, okay, take those small pieces of wood, put them up, tie a rope around the top, splay the legs out, tie ropes around the end. Take another piece of rope hanging from there, put a hook on it. You got a tripod. Get out of your head. And all of a sudden, now I'm standing there and there's a prototype of the tripod I needed to build. I was so worried about doing it that I didn't take action. I didn't try it. I didn't put things together. And all of a sudden, now I'm feeling this sense of accomplishment that I did it. And so what I did was I took one word and I associated with the feelings of accomplishment that I had after I actually built the damn tripod. So my magic word is tripod. And so the way I use it is I get it up against the wall of some challenge that seems unsurmountable. And I close my eyes and I just say to myself out loud, tripod, tripod, tripod. And all of a sudden, all of those feelings of accomplishment that I had 20 years prior, 40 years prior, I'm old. And they come back and they give you this energy. They give you this feeling of, I can do anything if I put my mind to it. And all of a sudden, like magic, you start coming up with solutions to your problems and you start taking risks, taking action. And if something doesn't work, you say, okay, well, half of that worked, so let me take the other half that didn't work and throw that out and come up with something else. And all of a sudden, you look back what you accomplished something. And so many of us say, huh, that wasn't so hard after all. You know, or it wasn't that difficult after all.
Right. And usually finding that the biggest obstacle in our way was us.
That tripod method is something that serves me well every day of my life. And you just got to find that word or that phrase that represents your epiphany, your sense of accomplishment when you achieve the impossible.
Because it is possible to achieve that. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
John, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You, again, masterful storyteller. How can our listeners and viewers find out more about you and more about your coaching, your book, and more about your magic?
Well, I make it really, really difficult to find me, sarcastically. Go to johnkippen.com. And to get the link to download the book, the free copy of my book, johnkippen.com/free gift, all one word. My email is john@johnkippen.com. I try to keep it simple. Yeah, I look forward to any of your listeners who want some encouragement, who want to talk to me about coaching. You know, it's we're in a time right now where everybody is worried about the economy. Everyone is worried about our government, no matter what side you're on, red or blue. Everybody's worried about how they're going to put their next meal on the table. And people are paralyzed. And what I try to do is help people release that tension. So if you're feeling stuck, you feel like you're in your own way, reach out. Let's have a conversation to see if my coaching program is right for you. And once you listen to this podcast, you may think you're fine. You may think you're, John had some good points, but that's not something I need. Be generous. go see your mom, go see your address book, go see your Facebook friends, and find someone else that might be struggling and send them a link to this podcast and change someone else's life if you're not needing to change your own.
Well said. Well said. Well, John, thank you for being one of the soldiers in the Army of the Light. And I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate all of our listeners and viewers tuning in for this episode. So we're going to wrap it up like we always do. Remember, stay positive, stay persistent, and know that mindset is everything.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of the Positive Persistence family. We're having a great time creating this content, and we truly hope it inspires you to embrace positivity and persistence in your own journey. If this podcast episode inspired you or entertained you, scroll down, hit those stars, and leave a comment. Your 5-star reviews and shares encourage us and help us grow the show. So until next time, stay positive, stay persistent, and remember, mindset is everything.